Hey, good morning, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. How many are getting, thank you, and how many are getting ready for turkey today? How many, how many today? All right, good. Any tofurkies out there or okay, great, awesome. We got all types here. Good morning, I'm Jeff. I'm one of the teaching pastors, one of the lead pastors here. Look, at last week I told you about something, but because we have a crowd that doesn't always show up every week, I'm needing to repeat myself, all right? So if you've heard this, you can tune out if you like. Just don't be obvious, okay? Look, at last fall, we opened up probably one of the most transparent times in my personal pastoral history, just about kind of where we were at as a community financially. And I shared at that time, last September, about an overdependence that we had developed as an organization on a few key donors. And it happens. It happens in churches. It happens in nonprofits all over the place. Couple people who really believe in your organization write big checks. And so it allows you not to talk about money with your main community as much as maybe perhaps you should be, just about the fact that we need everyone giving. And so, which is all fine and good. We had these people that could write big checks and everything was fine. But then when the economic downturn happens, then we end up exposing our organization to some serious risk. And so we opened up about that last September. And you guys responded. It was amazing. We went from having 67 families who are committed on a regular basis supporting Friends Church through pre-authorized giving in September, all the way up to over 100. That's like over a 30-some percent increase in a three-month window. You guys voted with your feet and said, look at, Friends Church needs to be healthy. We spread out the load and people got involved. At that time, we also started switching people from platforms like Moneris and Canada Helps. Maybe some of you remember that. People were giving online through Canada Helps. We switched over to our app, our Friends Church app. If you haven't got it yet, trust me, it's a good idea. But you can give through our app on a platform called PushPay, and it's cheaper for us as an organization. There's less administration fees. We did all that, and people started moving over. And there's still people with Moneris, but our number has jumped just on the PushPay platform up to 89. That was as of 2 weeks ago. And we said, man, it would be great if we could push up that number. Because really what happened is last year, while we were encouraging people to give more as a community, we were slashing and hacking expenses here too as an organization. And so we've gotten things right-sized, but as a community, we can't continue to go at this kind of level of budget for very long. We need to increase revenue. So, I told you last week we need to bump it up by about $2,800 a month, which for the size of community that Friends Church is, it shouldn't be a problem at all, if everyone just does what they can do. So, that's why I was here last week. I was saying, look, if you would be willing, if you haven't signed up yet to support us financially, monthly even, you can do that right off our Friends Church app. Just type in on the App Store, Friends Church, Calgary, boom, bring it up. And you can do it there. You can do it in the offering. You can do it in a number of different ways. But we would encourage you to do that. And I told you last week that for those that would be willing to do this, this is a board's idea, to say, hey, why don't we, because our community seems to love booze, we said, why don't, including the pastors, why don't we put together a little basket and we'll enter all the names that are new signups, we'll put them in a draw, and the winner takes home like a bottle of Ron Zacapa rum, we got some beautiful red wine, we got craft beer, it's a beautiful care package here. And so I said, hey, look, if you'd be willing to do that, jump in, we'll get you on board. Then an artist within our community, well-respected artist from Calgary, said, I want to sweeten the deal. I'd like to donate one of my paintings to be a part of this draw package. This painting is worth a lot of money. And I just was like blown away. I said, thank you so much. So the good news just keeps getting better. Your name gets entered in a draw to win not only a beautiful painting, and a booze package. I mean, you're going to go home one happy customer. So I've not only started up a new account, but I've upped my giving on this end. Also, yeah, there's people that are saying, hey, you know, for those of us that already give through PushPay, we're kind of left out of the mix. Why don't you throw our names in the hat if we increase our giving? I said, more the merrier. Jump on. So that's what we're doing too. If you already give, but you'd be interested in increasing your donation. All right. You can thank me later. All right.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you. Welcome to Friends Church. Just quick before Jeff comes up, anyone follow the Chief Court Justice nomination? Yeah, it seems to eye rolls. Here's a situation where a gentleman is going to a place where justice is the most important thing, and he's accused of sexual misconduct on three different counts. I watched social media about it. There was a protest as he was kind of going through this process. One of the protesters there had a picture on of her protesting against what was going down, and a lot of the comments had to do with whether she was wearing a bra or not, not what she's there to do. I read an article just recently, came through my feed, talking about a young woman, not young, mid-20s, grew up in a fundamentalist religious home. She says, I can't enjoy sex because the entire time I'm having sex, I'm thinking about if I'm going to go to hell or not. Our world seems to be wrestling with what is sexuality? What is healthy sexuality? How do we find our own healthy sexuality? And so we've been watching this over the last couple of months going, how do we address this? Because clearly saying nothing about this over the last however many years, can we all agree that's not working? So we got to talk about it. So on October 21st, we're going to start a new series. It's called Know Thyself. You know what, folks? I'm a total word nerd. You all know that, right? Know Thyself in English has to do with one thing now. In old school Bible, it had to do with having sex. So this is me playing puns. It's funny. If you all saw it, it's funny. It's all you need to know. That's funny right there. The statue I got is a picture of a woman in a church by Bernini. Says she's having a spiritual experience. I'm not sure that's exactly what she's doing, but folks, we got to start talking about sexuality, don't we? Like, seriously. Because this isn't working. This whole keeping it underground, not talking about it, it's not working. So we're going to spend 3 weeks talking about it. We're going to talk about sexuality in the context of religion, our past, and hopefully start to tease out what a healthy sexual conversation starts to look like. And more importantly, how each one of us in our uniqueness starts to find our healthy sexuality. I want to invite you all to come out. This is for teens all the way through to adults. It's PG-13. It's not going to get X-rated. But the Bible gets a little bit racy sometimes. I'm just going to warn you all. Sometimes it gets a bit crazy. But come out. Start this conversation. If you have teens, bring them along. Start this conversation with them. Because in the end, wouldn't it be nice if we all knew ourselves? Have a great week, everyone. Jeff. Oh, yeah, wait. Jeff always makes you guys applaud for me, and it always is super uncomfortable. So let's applaud Jeff, can we?
I like the pitch. That's good stuff. Hey, can I just ask you a question? Why did you come today? Why do you come? Some of you have been coming a long time, like, I've seen you stepping into this place Sunday after Sunday for years. Some of you give money. Some of you give a lot of your time and energy to this place. Like, why? Why do you do it? What's this all leading to anyways? Like, are you hoping to achieve something? Like, are you hoping this is going to do something for you? Like, and what? Like, how is this working? This might sound a little crazy to ask these kind of questions. Like, what is the end game to this? To our spirituality? If we're all on this spiritual journey, we're on this quest to find something, what is it we're hoping to find? And are we closer now than we were like a year ago or 3 years ago? Depending on which kind of circle or which kind of religious community that I would be asking these questions of, the answers might sound different. I grew up in a circle where the belief was that this journey that we're on is actually capable of making us physically more healthy. That actually there are things about our spiritual journey that kind of have power to make our bodies work better, to heal people of diseases. You get sick and it can get fixed. There are some people that say, I'm on this journey because I believe that following God and the way of God will lead to greater prosperity in my life. It'll actually turbo boost my career. I believe if I can commit my heart to God and do what he's wanting me to do, he is going to give me favor over other people. Push me to the front of the line. There's some people that believe that there is a level of protection. If you've invited God into your life, that he can kind of watch over you, maybe in a way that others don't experience. Then there's a grand prize. Heaven, right? If you buy in, if you invite God into your life, one day when your number runs up, heaven will be waiting for you. That's, talk about a list of sexy benefits to this gig. This was the sell sheet that I grew up knowing and understanding. My rationale for why I would want to be a part of Christianity. I remember as a young pastor, I had the pitch down, man. And I found that if I could rattle off these different benefits of being a Christ follower, anyone in the right mind would look at me and go, sure, I'm in. That's all right. Come on in, pal. Welcome to the family. You guys are looking at me like, where is he going with this? Here's the thing. If you dive into the scriptures, if you study kind of the arc of the various authors of our spiritual ancestors, and you read kind of, not just kind of pick and choose little verses, because trust me, I know those verses that you can get it to say what you want. But if you study the arc of the Bible, if you look at the characters that were main characters in the Bible, you would, in all honesty, you would have a tough time defending that this spirituality, this Christianity that we, big family that we're part of, is really about this kind of, hey, buy in and this will make your life that much greater and better. Straight up. That's problematic. Problematic for me if I'm pitching it out to some people and I'm, you know, if I'm really being honest, if I look at this, even if I look at the life of Jesus and I look at what he was pitching, Jesus, more than anyone, was not known for standing up and rattling off a sexy sales pitch that says, look at, come and follow me and look at all that you're going to get. I mean, it had nothing. It looked nothing like that pitch I just gave you about the booze and the free art. If you sign up, it's nothing like that. I think this surprised even some of the people that came to listen to him. I think especially his own closest followers. James, he was one of the fishermen that Jesus recruited to be one of his inner kind of posse. And I can just imagine James the day when Jesus picked him out from a group while he was out on the beach. He said, "James, you come and follow me. Put down those nets." James was a fisherman. He said, "Put down those nets. Come and follow me. I'm going to make you a fisher of men." I bet that day James is looking at Jesus going, "Me? You're picking me?" Rabbis in that culture, in that day, they were rock stars. Everyone, I mean, to be a rabbi, so esteemed. Those guys walked around, people would, and the rabbi picked me to follow him. Woo, I made it. Goodbye, long, futile nights of fishing. I am on the entourage. I'm with the man. I'm on the good train. I'm going to live the life. But it didn't take long for James to realize that it maybe wasn't all that he thought it really was about. At least not according to Jesus. There was this one time, they probably had been on a speaking tour for a while, and you know, I don't know what they needed to do to set up for Jesus, but they had been traveling, talking in front of crowds. Jesus was touching people and helping and encouraging and working through stuff with people, and Jesus' right-hand men were all kind of following with him, and they were staying in people's houses. I think long days were turning into long evenings, and then they get up and they do it again and do it again. I think James came to one point where he's like, "Okay, you know what? I'm tapping out, Jesus. Like, I just need some space. How about we take some days off?" Don't know how it all looked, but it says that the boys, Jesus and his disciples, jumped into a boat. They left the crowds and they headed out onto the lake. Now, it seems like what they were doing is they were going to cross over to another part, maybe a secluded place to have a little downtime, maybe a boys' night, get the fire going, play some cards, drink some wine, I don't know. They're heading across the water. They start coming to this remote spot. And as they're coming up, they see this crowd of people that it's almost like they're watching them. They've been watching them. And they kind of converged on this spot where the boat was landing. The guys are getting out of their boat, and James is like, "What the heck?" And this big crowd starts assembling. And James is like, "Jesus, are you going to tell them we're not on today?" And Jesus, I don't know, perhaps looks at James and says, "Hey, James, we'll have our time. I think I have some things to say to these people." And he begins to talk to them. He begins to teach. In fact, it says he spends a day there with these people, talking and teaching. And they're wrestling with different stuff that they're saying. And this crowd just keeps growing. According to the story, there's like 5,000 people that have gathered to listen to Jesus. Finally, I mean, it's, I don't know, 5 o'clock, 5:30. James has had it. James starts talking to the disciples. He's going, "Okay, enough. Enough already. Are you guys going to talk to Jesus, or am I going to have to?" No one was volunteering. James goes and he says, "Excuse me." He starts trying to get Jesus' attention. Jesus is talking to this big crowd. The big crowd start looking at James. And Jesus looking at James, he's like, "Jesus, it's been a long day. I think they're all tired. They're getting hungry. How about we just send them on home? We call it a day. They're hungry. Let them go home and eat." Jesus looks at James. Meanwhile, all these people, I'm sure, are all looking at him going, "What's going on here?" And Jesus says, "Tell you what, James, why don't you and the boys, why don't you feed all of them?" James is like, "What? You're kidding me, right?" He's like, "No, go ahead." I can see the crowd, "James, James." He's like, oh. He looks at the guys. They come up with this feeble plan to maybe start going through the crowd, see if they can pull together kind of a mismatch, a potluck for everyone. It doesn't work very well. They have two loaves or five loaves, two fish. They come back to Jesus. They're going, Jesus, there's nothing out there. This is all we got. Now, here's the part in the story that I was told all my life. This was the focus of the story. Jesus takes the five loaves and two fish, and he does a miracle, and the food multiplies, and they feed the crowd, and there's actually leftovers. The story growing up, the focus was on, wow, Jesus, holy smokes, that guy had power. But if you step away from the supernatural, if you step away from all the fantastic, and you look at the story more than literally, my thinking is there is Jesus looking at his followers. And he's going, James, I want you to see something. Sometimes it's not about you. And in fact, sometimes the spiritual journey is about looking at those around you and making their problem your problem. That's what I think. One night, Jesus was sitting down to eat a meal with his followers. His closest group, James would have been one of them. They're getting ready to have a big meal. All that day, another guy, one of his followers, Peter, keeps asking Jesus, hey, would you mind tonight when we kind of get together, could I like sit beside you? Like, I noticed you've been sitting a lot with John and you seem to like really think he's a great guy. And hey, don't get me wrong, he's a good guy. But I've been like doing a lot of stuff and you know what? I'm really committed and I would love to kind of be like your right hand man if you would think about it. They get to this dinner and the posse's all sitting around the table and there's Peter jockeying for a position. He's like, hey guys, no, I already talked to Jesus. No, hey, beat it. I'm sitting here and the guys are looking at him like, what are you doing? And right in the middle of all that going on, Jesus stands up and he walks over and he disrobes. And he would have wrapped a towel around his waist, which would have been common in that day for a servant. And he took a basin of water and a cloth and he began going one by one to his disciples, bending down and washing their dirty feet from that day of traveling. Now, you can't imagine the awkwardness in that room. The rock star rabbi washing my feet. But there he is, one by one. Well, Peter is sitting there, and he's watching this going down, and he's like, no way, no way. Jesus comes to him, and he says, you're not touching my feet. He's a rabbi. You're the man. You will never touch my feet. And Jesus says, Peter, I'm washing your feet. He says, you'll never, never wash my feet. Jesus says, if you can't figure out what I am doing here, you've missed it. You can't have any part of what I'm about if you won't let me wash your feet. Peter's like, his gears were grinding. He's like, I don't get it. He says, fine. Jesus finishes up washing all their feet. And then he says, listen to me, guys. What I just did for you, I am now challenging you to do for others. You need to do this. Talk about like an upside down kind of system. They're looking at Jesus and going, what are you calling us to? Jesus, this is not like the systems you've been a part of before. The more you study Jesus' way, the spiritual journey that he spoke of, that he role modeled, He offered very few promises of all these benefits of the Christian life. Instead, what he kept looking at people and saying, if you want to follow me, you will pick up a towel. You will help. You'll become more aware of what's going on around you. And you'll be willing to give of yourself, and you'll make other people's problem your own. Often people would hear Jesus' pitch and go, I'm out. Sorry. No way. That's not what I'm about. Like, I got places to go. I got people to see. I don't need to be worrying about other people in my life. But every now and then, it did work. Someone listening when I get it. There's a story of a young couple who had been forced to surrender the title of their home because they got so behind in their taxes. Young couple. I don't know, maybe she just had a baby. Back in that day, man, those tax men, they came around and, I mean, they had license. This couple had gotten the bad news. Her husband came to her and said, we do not have enough money for the taxes. And she's looking at the number and she's going, are you kidding me? We have to pay that amount of money. He says, we don't have it. We gotta forfeit the house. Many nights of crying and tears, wondering what they're going to do. They finally came up with a plan to move back with their family, with their parents. And the one day when they're having to move out and their boxes and the baby's crying and they've been at each other's throat, the stress is unbearable. She's been crying in the night. And there's a knock at the door. And she goes to that door and there is the tax man. And it was all she could do not to just start swearing at him. She said, honey, come here. He comes to the door and he says, oh, why are you here, Zacchaeus? What do you want? You've taken everything. You've taken our house. You've taken my dignity. Well, you're coming now. You want something more? But there was a softness about Zacchaeus. He says, no, I'm here to apologize. What I did was wrong. And right away, his defensive mechanisms kicked in, and he's going, you have come to yank us around like little mice. You play with us. He says, no, I'm not. I'm serious. I've come to apologize and make things right. Look at, I charged you this. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you, I charged you too much. In fact, what I should have charged you is this. I charged you this. I'm going to pay you back, not just the extra, but four times the extra. You can keep your home. They were blown away. Tears rolling down her face. She's going, I cannot believe you're doing this. They did not know what's going on. They're looking at him. They're going, why are you doing this, Zacchaeus? And he says, I've just found a better way. It wasn't until later that week, they're talking with some people in the village. And someone pipes up after hearing their story and saying, you know, I saw that Zacchaeus. He was with that guy named Jesus. He was having lunch with them the other day. And ever since then, I've noticed he's acting different. Jesus had a way of casting a picture, a way of life that when people saw it, There was no denying this was a better way. There was a different, there's a system here that made sense of their world. And not just church people. Often it was people that were sitting on the borders, on the margins. They were sitting outside, far away from church. But they would hear him talking and they'd go, yes, there's something about that thing that he's talking about, that way of life that makes so much sense. Especially those who had ever been touched in the way that he was talking. Had been touched by the system that he was promoting. Never, may never have been sexy or easy or convenient. Oftentimes what he was talking about was extremely difficult. But if you felt it firsthand, if you ever experienced this type of spirituality that he was talking about in your own life, you knew it was legit. That was over 2,000 years ago. And here we are today. I'm as convinced as ever that what Jesus, this way of Jesus that he talked about, is more legit and more real and more worthy of following than ever I've ever been. And I'll tell you why. Because I was 5 years old. My parents were going through a divorce. My dad had left. My mom was trying to hold down the house. She's working at Woodward's, a department store. And we get a phone call one night from my next door neighbor, Chuck Malarchuk. Mr. Malarchuk to me. Mr. Malarchuk asked if I would like to play minor hockey with his son, who is my friend, Chad. I remember my mom calling me down to the kitchen. She said, Jeff, would you like to play hockey with Chad? I said, like, huh? Like, real hockey? She said, yeah, like, would you like to, like, get on the ice and skate? And I mean, it's like asking a dog if you wanted to go for a walk. I mean, I was just like, are you tricking me? And mom says, no, you could go tomorrow and play. I said, yeah, please. So my mom takes me down to Sears that night. We go shopping for hockey equipment. My mom didn't know hockey equipment. I remember she got a guy and he was kind of fitting me for skates that night. Mom said I was so excited I wanted to sleep it with my skates on. I was just like, oh, I couldn't wait for the next 7 years. Mr. Malarchuk took me to practices, took me to games. He tied my skates. I remember one time calling me out on the ice. I'd scored a goal and I was kind of showboating and he pulled me over. He was one of our coaches. He said, Jeff, look at me. I don't care what the other guys are doing. You won't do that. That looks bad. Don't do that. I was like, oh, okay, Mr. Malarchuk, I won't do that. I remember another time we were heading into a Mac store. All these kids were all coming in. And he grabbed me by this, like all at the one time, and the door's flying open. He grabbed me by the scruff of the neck. He pulled me back. He said, hey, you let the girls go first. You hold the door for those girls. Okay. Sure, Mr. Malarchuk. I didn't have a clue. He even bought me Slurpees after games. I think back to that Mr. Malarchuk. I'm telling you, I was too young to know the good thing that he was doing. The hassle. Sometimes he was arranging rides for me to get home because his family had to go somewhere else after the game. Year after year, I wonder if sometimes he wasn't like going, oh, geez, we got to make arrangements for Jeff. My mom was buzzing. She was working at Woodward's and then she started working up as a real estate agent. She got to very few of my games, but Mr. Malarchuk, he was always there for me. Because of that guy next door, I have so many amazing memories of what could have been a dark time in my life. Really dark time. I've gone on to play hockey all my life. Some of my best friends are people that I met through playing hockey. I have Mr. Malarchuk to thank. Without him even realizing it, he he embraced the way of Jesus and made my problem his problem. I know the way of Jesus works because I have been deeply impacted. I have been so impacted. And not just by Mr. Malarcher. I can think of so many different families throughout my life. People that have stepped in. And I would bet money that there is not one person in this room who hasn't felt the power of a Mr. Malarcher. Someone has offered you their car. Or gave you a ride. Someone has lent you some money. Or even given you money. I'm betting someone has vouched for you. Someone perhaps has helped you land a job that you wouldn't have gotten without them. Someone has defended you. Someone has stood up behind you and said, no, no, no. You won't talk to her like that. Or to him like that. No, no, no. He's in line, thank you. Someone who stood up and befriended you. Someone has watched out for you and protected you. Someone has forgiven you after making a boneheaded move. Someone has given you a shoulder to cry on. Someone has returned a wallet of yours or something that you left behind when they could have done something else. I'm betting someone has babysat for you, your kids, or brought you meals when you needed them. Maybe someone helped you when you were in your darkest place. Someone sponsored you in the program. Someone befriended you in that circle and said, you stick with me. We're going to get you through this. Someone has done something that they didn't have to do. They could have said, that's not my problem. I got other things. But no, they said, and they Mr. Malarcher did. He said, come on. The way of Jesus. You've been touched by it like I have. And for all of you that have done this, I would say this is the heart of Christianity. Now you know why I don't get up here and pitch this sexy sales pitch about how this is going to make your life so much better. Because to be honest, I don't think that's really the heart of Christianity, true spirituality. I don't think it is. I think true spirituality calls our vision to go from this to this. It picks up on the suffering of others. It watches carefully. And not just those that we love the most. Especially our spouses and our partners, our kids, tuning into them and what they need. This Parenting Power Workshop, it's about learning how to love and tune into those kids and give them what, very important. It's about loving our siblings and our family. Some of you are sitting around the table today. For some of you, it's going to be the most glorious time because you get to see family. For others of you, you're going to be clenching your teeth and going, geez, I can't wait till this is done. But it doesn't matter because the way of Jesus doesn't just say you love those people who you love most. He says, no, 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 up the game. You're going to love some people who you have a trouble loving. You're going to love some people who make you want to true spirituality is this other-centered way that says it's not always about me. It doesn't mean that I neglect myself. It doesn't mean I don't care for myself. But it has a wider vision. And it says sometimes when the nudge comes, when that prodding comes, when you feel that irk and you notice, oh, geez. It says, maybe this need you can help with. Let me ask you something. In this moment today, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Could we just take a moment to reflect on the Mr. Malarcher that have touched our lives? And let the gratitude just well up. The people who didn't need to, probably the people who had so much other stuff to worry about, but they took the time and the energy. Just allow that gratitude to fill. Now I want to ask you, what does your spirituality look like? Is it this? Is it kind of with a handout? What do you got for me today, Jarvis? Is it this? Feed me. Bless me. Make me better. Make my life easier. God. Or can you open up and see a whole nother dimension of spirituality that would truly change our world? That's my challenge today. May we be Mr. and Mrs. Malarchuk. I could have talked all day about Mrs. Malarchuk. She fed me more, let me sleep over. We can do this. We want this community to just embrace the Mr. Malarchuk way. And I just celebrate, we celebrate as a staff team every week when we see reports coming back. Help friends helping friends. We hear little stories of people saying, oh, hey, you know what? Is there anything that the church can do for this? We're helping on this, but we could use some extra. Oh, we just love it. People making some other problems their own. Oh, we can do this. And we will be about this. All right, I'm done. Let's have an amazing Thanksgiving weekend, can we? And where we look across the table and whether you feel deep love or not, we're going to love, right? We're going to love. And this week, we're going to look for those opportunities. Open up the blinders. I'm telling you, you want to change the world. You want to change your own life? Learn to open these up. It'll happen. God bless you. Be with you.